Roni's Own Media and Roni'sOwn.com proudly present the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. Everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. Your hosts are myself, Jeff Roni, and
Colleen Roni, his wife.
That is correct. And thank you so much for joining us again. And we are really enjoying this show. And this episode, we're going to be covering episode 2.
Right.
The Thing You Love the Most.
Yes.
We've already kind of introduced ourselves, so what we want to do is start by a quick recap, as quick as we can go, because more than likely you've watched the show.
Right.
And if you haven't, this will give you kind of just an introduction to the episode.
Right. So, where we left off in episode 1, the clock started again in Storybrooke, Maine, and everybody's happy about it, except for the mayor. She realizes that things are kind of changing, and she doesn't like it. And she also then goes to Henry's book, that the fairy tale book that seems to be the kind of the crux of everything. She realizes pages are missing. She goes and asks him about it, and he's like, "It's old, pages are missing, why do you care?" So then she decides to go visit Emma at the Storybrooke Bed and Breakfast, Granny's Bed and Breakfast, and she brings her some apples, and she kind of is being nice, but at the same time, Emma realizes she's being threatened, and she's like, "Yeah, I'm not leaving." So then we go to a flashback that shows how the queen put the curse on the enchanted forest, or the fairy tale land. So apparently when she was at the wedding and she was threatening Snow White and Prince Charming, her threat was pretty much an empty one because she didn't have a curse to put on anybody. She kind of traded that away for the sleeping curse, which she then goes to the person who gave her that sleeping curse, which is Maleficent. Maleficent is another witch, I guess. And she had given her the sleeping curse, which Prince Charming broke that spell real easy. When she asks nicely for the horrible, awful, bad, evil curse, she says, "Yeah, no, you can't have it back. It shouldn't really be released. And whoever came up with this thing is pretty sick and twisted." And she decides, "You're not going to give it to me nicely." So she threatens her and her pretty little dark unicorn, black unicorn, and eventually takes the curse from Maleficent and then goes back and tries to enact it. She gets this council of evil characters from the fairy tale world, and they try to do the curse, and nothing happens. So they're all like, "Yeah, whatever. we're disappointed." They leave. Then we go back to Storybrooke, where the mayor, Regina, has asked Sydney, the reporter, to get some dirt on Emma. And all he can come up with is she ran over the sign. And so Regina's really mad, but she just really wants to get rid of her. So she comes up with a plot. Emma's in the cafe, and she is given this cup of cocoa with cinnamon in it, which is really unusual, and realizes that it's not the sheriff who gave it to her, who she thought had given it to her. It was actually Henry. She walks into school, and she meets his teacher again, and they talk, and she's kind of like, "Yeah, he kind of thinks that these people here are fairy tale characters," and they have this conversation. It kind of turns awkward. Then Emma, because Regina had kind of implanted in her head that that would be a good person to talk to. Well, he tries explaining, he's using this fairy tale stuff to kind of deal with real problems, and you really shouldn't, crush his imagination. And, "Hey, he's got a lot of problems. Why don't you read the file? Let me know if you have any questions." Well, then the minute she gets home or back to the bed and breakfast, the sheriff comes and knocks on the door and's like, "Yeah, did you have a fight with Archie?" She's like, "No." And he said, "Well, he basically said you tried to take a file, Henry's file." And she said, "No, he gave it to me." Anyway, she realizes this is getting more and more obnoxious. She knows that it has to be Regina who's behind this whole thing. So she decides to take revenge for having, she gets arrested for this. She gets out of jail because Mary Margaret Blanchard bails her out. She goes back to Regina's house and hacks up part of her apple tree.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"Picking apples."
You're out of your mind.
Come after me one more time, I'm coming back for the rest of this tree. Because, sister, you have no idea what I'm capable of.
Your move.
Back in the fairy tale world, Queenie decides that she's got to visit Rumpelstiltskin because he's the one who gave her the curse in the first place. And she's like, why didn't it work? And he said, because you don't understand that, you know, with great power basically comes the sacrifice. And so you didn't sacrifice anything you really loved. And she goes, Snow White took that from me. And he said, well, there must be something else you love.
This curse isn't going to be easy. Vengeance never is, dearie. You have to ask yourself a simple question. How far are you willing to go?
As far as it takes.
Then please stop wasting everyone's time and just do it. You know what you love. Now go kill it.
She realizes that the only thing she does love is her servant. And so she knows she has to take his heart and put it in as part of the curse. And then he says, oh, and by the way, this information is going to kind of cost you. And what that will cost you is when you get to this, when you transport and invoke this curse and put everybody in this horrible place, I need to be comfortable, rich, powerful, and pretty much anything I say, you have to do as long as I say please first. So she agrees because she figures he ain't going to remember anything anyway, so no big deal. Emma goes back to the bed and breakfast, and she's basically told by Granny, sorry, you're a felon, we can't have you stay here, so she makes her leave. As she's leaving, Regina calls her and says, hey, come, I want to, you know, let's talk. She goes over to the mayor's office, and they start talking, and she says how, you know, crazy everything sounds because it's all this fairy tale stuff, and it's, I mean, how do you believe that? Well, apparently Henry was standing outside the mayor's office, which he does every day at that same time, and overheard it, and now he doesn't want to talk to her. So she goes over to Miss Blanchard's, and they have this nice little conversation, and she decides, she's thinking she should just leave. Well, Miss Blanchard tells her to stay, that Henry needs her, that he would be better off if she did stay, not if she left. So she goes and says, you're right, you know what, I'm going to take care of him. So she goes over to the therapist's office, and he's in the middle of a session, and she explains, look, just because his story is crazy, that doesn't mean it's not true. So he kind of realizes, oh, so you're pretending that you think it's crazy so that she will, you know, she says, look, I told her what she wanted to hear. Oh, okay, great, great, this is perfect. But then he'd given her the pages, the missing pages from the book, because the pages that he gave her had her in them, talked about the baby, Emma. And so he'd given them to her, and she said, let's burn these so she doesn't know what the real plan is. So she burned them in the office, and then in the flashback, we pretty much end with the evil queen going to her father in the castle, who we thought was the servant, and basically telling him, pretty much, I have to kill you. And he says, can't you just be happy? Can't you let this go? And she's like, I need to be happy. And he goes, I think you can do it. We can start a whole new life. And he tries to convince her it's not a good idea to kill him. Rightfully so. And she says, okay, yeah, I think I can be happy. And she ends up killing him anyway. And she uses his heart and she invokes the curse. Then we flash forward again, or flash the present day again, where Regina is cleaning up all the mess from where Emma had chopped up part of her tree. And Mr. Gold shows up and basically indicates that he's the one who arranged the adoption for her to adopt Henry. And that, interestingly enough, where'd you get the name Henry? Which, as we saw in the flashback, was her father's name. And then she kind of freaks out a little bit, realizing that he kind of knows what's going on.
I really must be going.
Tell me what you know about her.
I'm not going to answer you, dear. So I suggest you excuse me. Please.
And that was pretty much the end of episode 2.
Go ahead and do some connections.
Connections and interesting points.
I'll try and do the lost ones first, and then we'll do the non-lost.
Okay.
Regina said, you have no idea what I'm capable of. And what's interesting is there are certain lines that, for instance, I will destroy you if it's the last thing I do, is something that she said in the pilot.
Which is also very much what is in a lot of the fairy tales. They frequently say that anyway.
Right. And then also she said it in a fairy tale land, and she said it in the real world
right.
too. So
right.
There's this kind of repeating of the same lines. And so she said, "You have no idea what I'm capable of." And Shannon in Lost said that in Exodus Part 1. Mm. And then also Emma said the same thing.
Yes, she did.
Toward the end.
She did.
So it's this kind of the same line.
Right.
And the discussion between the Evil Queen and Maleficent, did I say it right?
Maleficent, yes.
Okay, she was in Sleeping Beauty.
She is the okay. evil fairy in Sleeping Beauty, yes.
And when they were talking about the fate of the others, it reminded me of Jacob and the Man in Black kind of discussing, you know, the power struggle and all this. I mean, we're not talking about good and bad, but we're talking about two people that are discussing the fate of a bunch of people.
Right, right.
And so I thought that there was a kind of a correlation there. There's also a ship steering wheel or a wheel in the window of the Storybrooke bakery shop. And you can see that as Emma and Henry walk by.
Mm-hmm.
And in the blog post I did for this, I also had a link to some shots of somebody took during the filming. And in one of the shots, there was a bear cleaner box that was one of the props that were on the shelf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see it. I looked a couple of times. But anyway, kind of interesting little Lost things here and there. I'll put the link on the show notes for this podcast.
Sure.
When Emma and Mary Blanchard were having a discussion of who they are in Henry's book, the school bell rings, and it's almost like the story rings a bell, and it was almost like in the finale of Lost when they started to realize who they were, you know, on the Lost Island and the connection.
Right.
So when I looked at it, I went, well, that's what it reminds me of.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, Henry. The Evil Queen's father tells the Evil Queen that the choice is yours. And choice was a theme throughout Lost.
Absolutely.
It was your choice. You choose. I remember, you know, Jacob, you know, always talking to people. It's your choice. So anyway, Mary Blanchard also mentions that she feels that she and Emma have met before. There's also the cinnamon link. So
meaning in the hot cocoa and the coffee, you know, they all three apparently like cinnamon in their chocolate.
Right. And it could be something just within the show.
It's that connection. I think, like you said, these are the connections between people and each other, and they may not realize it. And that was a huge theme in Lost.
Right.
Huge toward, especially the last few seasons.
Well, now work through the non-Lost. The title logo segment, I remember that the wolf was there initially. And I think every week it's a different thing.
Yeah,
it may very now well it's be. The unicorn.
Right.
I remember in the pilot, there was a mobile in Snow White's room in the castle that had a unicorn mobile hanging over the crib.
Right.
It couldn't have been the crib because the child wasn't born yet.
No, they would have had the crib in preparation
okay, right,
for
okay,
her.
Okay.
So, yeah. Just, no, that's fine. That's normal.
Make sure. All right.
Yeah.
So, also, Archie mentioned the library's rusted old innards, and that's definitely pretty close to a Star Wars line that C-3PO mentioned. Mm-hmm. Next one. Now, I'm not an Apple expert, but I'll tell you what, the apples that Regina had in her little basket were not Honeycrisp apples.
No.
I eat those. They're not all red.
No. Those are Red Delicious. And it's interesting that they chose to call them Honeycrisps. But she talked about the fact that the Honeycrisp is a tree that bears fruit and it can last even as temperatures as low as 40 below. I mean, it was that she made a point of that. So
now,
that was interesting.
You know what that speech reminded me of was actually the Pinot Noir speech. That was in Sideways.
Oh, yeah.
About
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
How the grapes, you know, could withstand anything and live on the
Party,
side of the hill and all this.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It was interesting.
So these are the kind of things we're going to bring. Just all these little kind of connections to almost anything.
Right.
So then Emma mentioned Read Between the Lines, referring to the fairy tale book that Henry has. So this there's all this kind of idea that it's not just the story, but it's something within the story that there's...
Right, things that are not being said.
Yeah. And on a side note, I just want to talk about this. We didn't mention it in the last podcast, but I think the biggest theme of this show is belief.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe? What does it take for you to believe?
Right.
Do you have to see it? Or do you take it on faith, let's say? Or do you take it by someone else telling you?
Right.
What do you believe about yourself?
Right.
Well, what do you believe about your future?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe what other people tell you about you? Or mm-hmm. do you believe it within yourself?
Right.
And do you believe what a book says about you?
Right.
I mean, it's the belief. I think that's a core thing.
That is a core theme, it
so,
looks like.
Mm-hmm. And I think I think we're going to see it more and more and more. So the Dark Unicorn was in
Maleficent's
castle. I don't know what that's from, but it just kind of stood out to me. Normally, unicorns are white.
Normally, yes. But I believe, and I'm going to have to look this up. I believe there's actually a Russian fairy tale that has a black unicorn in it.
Okay.
Also, look it up.
Okay. And the Evil Queen visits Maleficent. Yeah, from Sleeping Beauty.
Which, by the way, her name, Maleficent, is basically, it's Mal, which is bad.
Mm.
That's just, yeah.
Well, she had a horn clip in her hair that looked like horns.
Yes, and also her staff that she carried around that had the orb on the top of it that basically held the curse.
Right.
It was guarded by a dragon. So like a dragon, a metallic dragon wrapped itself around the orb. So it was not like you couldn't just pull it right off of there. You had to break it. She had mm-hmm. to break it to get the curse vial out of there.
Okay. And why is she blonde? I don't know.
Well, we don't know because you know what? We don't know. Maleficent, we don't know her backstory. And in, let's say, for example, the Disney movie, because I know that was another thing that I read too, was that the writers of the show, the creators of the show, they got permission, which is pretty much unheard of, from Disney, from ABC, to use a lot of the Disney characters and names and things. Because these Disney movies introduced items, facts, story, background, whatever, that weren't in the original fairy tale. So they kind of took a little license. So when they're going down these, you know, these paths and these stories, some of them are coming from the actual original fairy tale and some are coming from the Disney version.
Okay.
So anyway, we don't know what color hair she had in the Disney version. She was kind of bluish, greenish color face. And she always wore a hat that had horns. So that we don't know why she's blonde. Don't know if that's significant or not.
I think it's funny that the Evil Queen traded something for this sleeping curse. It didn't work, and then she's come to get it back.
Yeah, she kind of
basically funny.
Was like,
it was like a refund.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I was laughing. So, I was going, really?
Well, and it was kind of funny that she tried to be all sweet about it. And then, you know, even Maleficent, who was supposed to be pretty bad, which I kind of find interesting. Are they going to do a little twist to her like they did in Wicked, the play where the Wicked Witch of the West is actually not as wicked as we think she is? I mean, are they going to do a similar twist here on Maleficent and maybe she's misunderstood? I don't know. That'll be interesting to see how she plays out. If she does, I'm sure she will. You know, even she was, like, reluctant to give her that. And the funny thing is, it's kind of like the queen has been taken a few times. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, she's almost been, like, swindled out of stuff.
Trades and deals are very important.
Oh, very much so. Well, what's the currency? There is no currency. You got to trade stuff. And the funny thing is, if you ask me, Maleficent knew that the sleeping curse could be broken.
Right.
Well, which... ultimately, we find out eventually that when Queenie goes and see Rumpelstiltskin, he basically tells her, he goes, look, all curses can be broken.
Right.
So obviously, she didn't think that was the case. So she's put all her stock, she put all her stock in the sleeping curse. And that's all it was a sleeping curse.
Mm-hmm.
So that right in and of itself kind of makes you think she's just so enraged by what Snow White did. She wants vengeance no matter what. So it's interesting, and like I said, I think it's funny. You know, it's almost like they kind of are able to really easily pull the wool over her eyes.
Yeah, and I think the Evil Queen gets drunk with power.
Well, she does,
and she just wants
blind
power.
Rage.
Right,
it's a blind rage, is what it is. And I mean, even when her father was like going, "Look, we could just totally start over. Let's just make a new life for ourselves," she's like, "No, I want revenge."
Yeah, and we don't know what exactly happened.
Right, we don't know.
To her true love.
Right. We don't know who her true love is or what happened to him.
Or how, or if he is destroyed, or if he is, was he translated to the real world?
Maybe it's Sheriff Graham.
Could be. I mean, that was one of the searches, the questions that Search had pulled up my blog post.
Yeah.
Is Sheriff Graham the evil queen's lost love in the fairy tale land?
Right.
So, you know, another idea is a whole Lady Hawk thing where the lovers cannot be the same human entity in the sunlight.
Right.
Or in a good land. And so they can't ever be together.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I just toss that out
there. Yeah, and that's possible. So, who knows?
I guess that the black unicorn was something very dear to Maleficent.
Well, it was like her pet, because when Evil Queen was in there and she was basically going, okay, you're not going to give it to me nicely, I'm going to take it.
Right.
She pulled all the weaponry from the room, which was kind of funny. She pulled all this weaponry and then turned her hands, and all of it was pointed at the queen, at Maleficent. And Maleficent's like, yeah, please bring it on. And then she realized, oh, that's not going to do it. Okay, let's take your pet out.
Right.
So then she's like, no. And that's when she, you know, kind of jumped in front of it. So obviously that unicorn means something to Maleficent.
To me, there are a lot of Star Wars direct copy stuff.
Well, and I'd wager if you probably pin these guys down, they would tell you they're huge Star Wars fans.
When the Evil Queen walked into the wedding in the first episode, she pushed him aside, basically using the Force power to throw him, like Yoda did to the two guards inside the Emperor's room.
Right.
You know, he just kind of pushed him away or knocked him into the wall. Mm-hmm. And the same thing here is when she gathered all the weaponry and pointed them and threw them, you know, it's just very similar to, you know, the Force.
Right.
You know, in a Jedi.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the battle between Yoda and Count Dooku.
Right.
So,
yeah. Because, you know, Dooku bent that thing over and tried to drop it on Yoda, and Yoda stopped it and gave him enough time to escape.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see a lot of the whole Jedi Master type of activity.
Oh, very much so.
You know, and even the force field that Maleficent put in front of her and the unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
Was, you know, looked like on... the Gungan planet, Naboo.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
You know, the kind of protecting thing. So, yeah, I'm a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, that's what I really noticed.
Yeah.
So, the blind witch that was around the circle when the Evil Queen began the first try at the Dark Curse.
Right.
You did a little research.
Well, I did, and I was trying to find out, okay, well, first of all, was she really blind? I mean, was she blind because she was blind, or were her eyes sewn shut because she was, I don't know. And that's, I took it to be that she's blind. So to me, that sounds an awful lot like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. It may be her, or it may be a whole other fairy tale I'm just not aware of. So that's where I kind of think that's who she might be, but we'll see.
Okay, Henry mentions the hero to Emma. The hero never believes the story at first. That's what makes it a great story.
Right.
And there's a writer named Joseph Campbell. Actually, he studies themes and myths, and he brings out threads and themes and stories that are the same to people. And so throughout history, these themes are in these stories. And George Lucas was one of his greatest students. And Star Wars is full of these things. And so the reluctant hero is one of those themes where, you know, Luke was asked by Obi-Wan, you know, you got to come to me to save this princess. And he goes, I can't go. Are you kidding? I got to stay here. I got things to do. And then obviously when, you know, his uncle and his aunt are killed, then he comes back and then he takes up the task.
Right.
And so, you know, the reluctant hero is always the one where it's always asked of the hero, come and do this task. And the hero says, no, I'm either not good enough, whether we got a Moses issue in the Bible.
Right.
I'm slow of speech. I can't do it. Or we have somebody that I'm not a hero type, you know. And then through the process, they realize that, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's another really interesting correlation between the two.
Right, right.
So Dr. Hopper's office looks very much like a forest. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the wallpaper in the mayor's office and in Granny's diner has
the
a lot of
breakfast.
Forest, the bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. It all has foresty look to it.
Right, right. It's all very, very enchanted.
Right.
It's got that, you know, it's got a very natural nature feel to it. Yeah. And I mean, everything about Dr. Hopper's office, I mean, the color scheme, it's green and yellow and like deep rich wood colors. And yeah, it's, and even the way he dresses.
Right.
Is reminiscent a little bit of actual the Jiminy Cricket dress from how he was dressed in the Disney cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
In Pinocchio.
Except in Pinocchio, I think he had a red scarf, but anyway.
He might have, but it was, yeah.
So, a couple of things about Dr. Hopper's office. One is when he was on the phone to the mayor on the little, you could see the thinker, little statue on something behind him.
Yeah.
And then also when Emma was leaving, there was a shot of drawers or something. On top, there were some mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
A number of mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, mm-hmm. this is kind of convey the idea of a forest or something. Little things that...
Well, and being a cricket, he would be small enough that he could walk among underneath the mushrooms, especially so they were up higher, right?
Right.
Yeah, so he's very much...
Yeah, true. And it's very interesting in the fairy tale world that they have a magnifying glass
to see him
because he's so small
on the war council
table.
Yeah.
So the evil queen nears Rumpelstiltskin's cell as a rat, and then when she turns from rat to human, she goes and becomes this black smoke.
Right.
So again, it's another allusion to Lost, as well as that's how she changes from form to form. To me, Rumpelstiltskin, I think, sounds like Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight.
Really?
Yeah. It's really that type of just kind of crazy staccato, the way he talks. But that's what it reminds me.
I'll have to pay attention next time I hear him speak. I didn't pick that up, but that doesn't mean anything because I was really focused a lot on the background stuff because I know there's Easter eggs in the background all over the place.
Right. So the evil queen asked Rumpelstiltskin what went wrong to the first attempt, and he told her that it requires a heart of what she truly loves, which is her father, Henry, which we find at the end of the episode. But Joseph Campbell, one of the things he said was, for someone to receive full and greater power, they have to kill their father. And there was a scene in Return of the Jedi when the Emperor said, strike him down. He was telling Luke, strike down Vader and take your father's place at my side.
Right.
So there was always this kind of vengeance and violence to take a more powerful place.
Well, and not necessarily to kill, although that is the theme in Star Wars.
Right.
But I was also thinking of type, basically kind of usurping, because I think mm-hmm. that if you go even biblical, you know, Satan trying to tell Jesus, hey, you take over and be the one, you know, kind of worship me. And it's that whole leave your dad, get him out of the picture. That's what I see. Is get your dad out of the picture.
Right. And two, I think there was a point I remember that when Rumpelstiltskin was saying, you know, there's a price for what you're asking.
Right.
And then she kept saying, you'll have an estate and this and that and this and that. It kind of reminded me of the Jesus and the devil in the desert,
mm-hmm.
you know, just offering all these things, you know.
Right.
So anyway, a long stretch, but. Anyway,
and he really only wanted one thing,
right.
Her undying loyalty, basically, as long as he said, please do whatever I ask.
Right.
So, yeah. That's
so, in a way, he's more powerful than her.
And exactly.
We'll probably see that as time goes on.
All the cards, man.
Mm-hmm. So, in the mayor's office, there's a horse statue over the fireplace, which that was the first thing that she killed and
got
the
heart.
Yeah,
her prized steed. And he said, are you kidding me? You think that for a curse this magnificent and this, you know, powerful, as a horse is going to do? No, it's going to be something more. And that's where she kind of went, oh, there's nothing more. Snow White killed, you know, destroyed that. And he's like, no, there's something else. So it's an interesting.
And the color scheme of her house plus the anti-office, or right. I guess her mayoral office is right. black and white.
Right, which is interesting because her actual office there in the probably what would be considered the city hall, her office is black and white, but the outer yeah. office was bright yellow.
Right. And I think, me, that she struggles because she has a son, mm-hmm. but she struggles to be good, but she's evil.
Well, she's very evil, but the funny thing is, you know, I mean, she's evil, and even Henry says she's evil, and Emma kind of goes, no, she's not evil. He goes, no, you don't understand right. it. My life sucks. She's terrible. I think it's that she's bitter, and she's got something she won't let go of, which is very much with the queen. That's the problem I see with the queen. She had something, and again, I'm hoping we'll get to see how Snow White, quote unquote, played a part in this.
No, I want to know that. I want to know who wrote the book. I want to know why Rumpelstiltskin's in jail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's questions that
there's
have.
There's a lot of questions.
There's a little statuette that had multiple faces.
Yeah, and I looked at that and I went, okay, three faces on a vase. It wasn't a statue, it was like a vase. And I thought, that might be the three fates, which is Greek mythology. That's definitely a possible. Or then there was, the three blind fates. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if that plays a part at any point in time. Again, a lot of this stuff just could be, that was kind of an unusual thing that they found and the prop department or, set decorators decided that would work really well. But I still think there's a lot of significance in most everything that they put in these shows.
Right. And Dr. Phil's taken copious notes
I'm sure
about me.
Yeah, not so much.
And when Emma leaves, Regina puts her arms on the two high arms of the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Very much, to me, like a classic throne.
Very much, yeah.
You know, and she was very sure of herself.
Sat very regally.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of warnings about revenge and violence and power is seductive and all this stuff. And those are huge within Star Wars. And I think just, mythology and stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't take the easy path. You got to take the hard path. And revenge, beware. And Rumpelstiltskin said vengeance, mm-hmm. it's costly. Mm-hmm. You can't.
Right. It costs you. It's not easy. Yeah. It's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you dearly.
Yep. So, we got an email, and they were asking about Snow White's guard.
Yeah.
And there was a
the coat of arms that was on the.
You got. Yeah. There's a paper. I think you're writing it down.
Yes.
Somewhere.
I took notes on that. That there is on the coat of arms that her guard is wearing. And we can probably get an image of that, I would think, to put on the show. You focus in, this is in episode one, where the prince is going in to take the baby into the wardrobe. The first thing you see is that focus is very directly on this coat of arms, on the shoulder of one of the guards, that is Snow White's and the prince's guard. The interesting thing is, I started doing some research, it was like, the email was, well, is there any significance to this? So I looked at it, and I did some checking research, and which I've always been kind of fascinated anyway. I have a really interesting coat of arms for my family, my maiden name. Won't go into that, but all the characters, the colors, the placement of everything means something. For example, it's a white basic background with seven little blue and white flowers, and then a red single chevron, and then under that is a blue and white outline of what looks like kind of a lion or a big cat or something, right? So I started doing some research on that. Okay, so colors. Again, colors play a huge part in heraldry. First thing is white signifies peace and sincerity. And the color that they used for the blue, it's almost a blue-green. So I picked both blue and green to kind of get the qualities for blue and green, since it may very well be that they intended that. Blue equals truth and loyalty. And green signifies hope, joy, and loyalty and love. So those are very, admirable, wonderful qualities that obviously Snow White and Prince Charming would have. Red typically means a warrior or a martyr and military strength and magnanimity. The animal, to me, looked like a panther, which is fierce but tender and loving to children and will defend her children with her life. So I think that the panther is basically Snow White, and the flowers, there were seven of them, which I wouldn't be surprised represent the seven dwarves. They're white roses, which signify love and faith, charm and innocence. So I think there's a lot to that coat of arms. Maybe the show's creators just randomly picked what looked like good items to put on a coat of arms, but I kind of think they did a little research and that's where I think it came from.
I also saw white flowers on Mary Margaret Blanchard's dress when Regina came to talk to Henry at the school.
Exactly. So, exactly. You know, and similar, they were very similar in shape to the flowers that were on the coat of arms. Absolutely.
We're not going to have any news because we're still kind of catching up with things, and any news that we talk about is going to be more recent. So we're going to wrap it up here. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And the key is, it's not just us, but it's also you.
Right.
So what did you like about the episode? What did you think it was missing? But also add to it. What did we miss? We're not going to catch everything.
No.
And so let us know what you thought. Did you agree? Did you disagree? Was there something that you noticed that we didn't see? Let us know. So we're going to give you some ways to get a hold of us. The main website URL is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Pretty easy.
Yeah, it's easy enough.
And we also have an email. It's oncepodcast@gmail.com. Send us all your questions or input or whatever. We also are on Twitter. It's OUAT podcast. So it's twitter.com/OUAT podcast. And there's also a voicemail number if you're brave enough to call. Sometimes I'm not brave enough to call podcasts and leave stuff.
Right.
But we'll be nice and we'll play it and we'll get you on our podcast, and that'll be really cool. So it's 657-333-0626. So those are a number of ways that you can get a hold of us, and we really appreciate you listening and sharing it with your friends, and we're really enjoying Once Upon a Time, so we'll be here next time.
Sounds good.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.